So another magical production at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, The Magic Flute, playing now through the end of January. We're so excited to have in our studios two of the stars of The Magic Flute, Christiana Karg and Andrew Staples. Thanks for being here.
Hello.
Pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about The Magic Flute. I know any production that you will see at the Lyric is going to be magical and magnificent, but The Magic Flute might be new to many people. Let's talk about The Magic Flute.
I think some melodies everybody heard once. I think of the aria of the Queen of the Night, this very, very high aria with a lot of high notes. I think everybody heard that once in a lifetime. So I think they will know some music of the Magic Flute.
A lot of times you go into something and you hear the tune or the melody and you go, oh.
Yes, in concert we see that. And when there comes a really well-known bit, then you see people just listening more carefully and enjoying even more.
And Christiana, you play Pamina.
I do Pamina, yes.
And Andrew, you play
Tamino.
All right, tell me about your characters.
Well, Tamino is a prince. And
of course, right?
Right.
Very fitting.
Yeah. And he is lost in the woods, I guess, and chased by a dragon or a snake. Then he meets a guy dressed as a bird. Three ladies rescue him from a snake. He falls in love with a picture of Pamina, and then meets her mother, as you know, all proper courtship, you should go through the
right.
mother. And once she's said, "You must go and rescue my daughter from the clutches of various evil men," the prince goes on his quest and eventually does meet Pamina, not allowed to speak to her. She gets very upset with him, and then it all ends very, very happily. And that is pretty much Tamino's timeline through the Magic Flute.
Now, is this a dream role? You're playing a prince. You're going to rescue this beautiful woman.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't.
You get rescued by three women.
I do, yeah.
But while chasing a dragon.
None of these things is, you know, new to me. This happens in my daily life.
Just another day.
It's just another
Mr. Staples
day.
Here.
Yeah, just another day at the office. No, it's a great role, and it's got some fabulous kind of. As well as sort of all of the lighthearted side of it. It is really sort of touching and honest as well. And you have these incredible moments of existential crisis as well. I mean, you're sort of trying to struggle your way through these sort of, albeit slightly crazy situations. But that you see something of a real honesty and sort of the every man's sort of human condition, I guess, which is fun to play.
And we do the roles for longer now, yeah. And we always discover something new, and this is fantastic. If you really, after years performing that role and singing that role, you still can discover something and you find more depth by performing it. And this is really something I think other people cannot say, that they always discover new things in their work. And so Mozart was just a genius, giving us always new ideas by the years.
The Lyric Opera, to me, and I think to Chicago audiences, is such a magical place in which to perform, is it not? It's just, the sets are grandiose, the costumes are stunning and spectacular. What's it like performing at the Lyric?
First, if you come on stage, it's huge, especially as a European, because our houses, our opera houses and theaters are really much smaller. Mm-hmm. So it's at least double size, and you feel a bit very, very small on stage, and it's weird. And then you open your mouth and you sing, and it's fantastic acoustic. So it's really, the sound is fantastic here. And it's, and that one makes it really easy. And I am here for the second time. I sang Figaro last year.
Yep.
And I really enjoy myself a lot here. Also the city, I like it a lot. And we meet also during our stay, we meet a lot of people, opera freaks and opera lovers.
Of
and,
course.
It's very interesting how much the opera house is in the hearts of the people here.
That's what I see too at the Lyric. You do have, there's so many fans. It's not just a specialty fan anymore. It seems everybody is embracing the opera. Do you see that too as actors?
Yeah, I think you do. I think, and certain, especially around sort of some festivals and some big places. And, you know, and I think it happens more on sort of in the continent than it does in the UK maybe. Mm-hmm. You certainly get that sense here as well. What Christiana was saying, that the sort of sense of community around the opera house here is very strong.
Yeah.
And that feeds into the way that you you tell the stories on the stage as well, knowing that it's it matters to people. It's not just a sort of the next show in town, but there's a certain kind of buzz around what's going on, and people you know, really are interested in what's going on.
The opera's so demanding on your voices, mainly. I mean, but you're also, you're acting, you're singing, you're moving. It's physically and mentally demanding. Talk about some of the demands of the opera.
First of all, you have to remember all the words. This is sometimes a bit
tricky. And they're in German. I mean, it's no problem for you because...
It's also a problem for me. It's worse sometimes because I can't find just something, a German sound, because I'm really irritated if I sing in a language that I know and then I miss a word. So this is even more difficult, I think. And then singing, running... There is a lot to do, but therefore we rehearse for such a long time. I don't know if the audience, if they really know how much we are rehearsing. So we are here for 4.5 weeks already.
Yeah. Which is a lot. What is that, 8 shows a week you're doing? Hmm. That's quite demanding on your voices. As a soprano and a tenor, I mean, what do you have to do? What's the preparation that you do, say, before before it begins and then during as well? I mean, I know we're doing the interview now. But do you rest your voices on particular days?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm not very good at the things you're supposed to do as a singer. There's sort of lots of our colleagues might say, you know, you don't have any dairy and you know.
I was going to say, you're in Chicago, so you're going to be stuck with deep dish pizza.
Right, I know, yeah. So I'm probably not the best person to ask. But yeah, I think if you're a proper singer, you should rest your voice. You should drink sort of warm, you know, non-alcoholic drinks.
Non-alcoholic. And you should. Andrew's saying, oh, no, yeah. check.
But no, I think, I mean, the other thing, the thing about opera now that I think is really positive and is really good is that it's, I mean, there was a time when it was acceptable to be you'd stand quite still on stage and, you know, wear the nice costumes and just sort of sing beautifully, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And I think to some extent that is... that allowed opera to become an art form that I don't know, maybe was harder to connect with compared with cinema or theatre or other things. So now that the demands on us are to create a real life on stage and be to look and sound, you know, exactly as beautiful as before, but to bring some sort of more energy and agility to some of the things. And this opera, you know, it's a young cast and there's kids on the stage, right down to the sort of age of, what, I think the youngest guy's sort of 7 or 8 singing, uh-huh. You know, in an opera stage, which is amazing. And, and everyone's, you know, quite active and running and climbing and, it's great.
So you both, again, you're both very young too. Is it kind of...
Very young.
Extremely young. Yeah, wow. Young. I mean, we had to put high chairs in the studio today. Yeah. But you're both young. Is it cool to kind of see the younger kids? Do they look to you as mentors?
Gosh, I hope not.
No, but for example, the 3 boys, they're really young and a girl just, and they speak to you in the name of your role, of course. They say, hey, Pamina, how are you today?
Yeah.
And this is really funny. And
that's great.
And now they saw the costumes for the last rehearsal and they are amazed because we are from Disney Store. Yeah. We escaped from Disney School. Store. And I'm Snow White.
Uh-huh.
And it really looks from far. I think it looks as the.
Well, you're a princess.
I am a princess.
Well, in general, I mean,
and I think every girl just wants to be
the princess.
Yeah, also the princess. So
but how cool is it? They probably look at both of you and say, "A princess and a prince." You know, they're enamored by you.
I think. Well, what they don't realize is we'd love to have another go at it and be 12 again.
Yeah,
you know, starting all over again. But no, they're. It is nice, and that feeling of. I've always had this sort of thing of having the kind of heroes you'll never meet in your life, you know, the singers who maybe have passed away or who are just so famous you'll never meet. And then there's these kind of like attainable heroes who you might know and they'll never know that you're looking up to them. But I think within this cast, it's nice because of the age spread and the range of, you know, experience that's happening.
Who were your heroes growing up? Who did you look to for inspiration? Family or on a professional level too?
Well, one of them was this guy called Fritz Wunderlich, who's sort of every tenor's sort of hero, and sadly died very young, but was my kind of inspiration for lots of things.
It was definitely Maria Callas, because I think she did that what you were talking about, the new style of opera, not just standing and singing, but the drama, and she did not care so much about her voice. We all unfortunately know. But she put so much drama in it that it became life. And this is, for me, more interesting than just a very formal presentation of an opera. And I think after her, it's very difficult to go back to these times.
Yeah.
And I loved Pavarotti. He was kind because the voice was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. He could allow himself just to stand and to sing. Maybe he's the only one I would allow that to.
Wow.
I think you'll find that Chicago audiences are very, very passionate about their performances. Final thought, what would you want your audience to take away from your performance from The Magic Flute?
You want people to come out happier than they went in. I think, I mean, it's a piece that is that works on so many different levels. It's like a really, really good cartoon that speaks to everyone. You know, it's sort of, it has a kind of a truth at its core, which is, you know, it's talking about women's liberation and an Age of Enlightenment ideas. And but as well as that, it's just something that fuels, a kind of an extraordinary sense of luckiness to be alive, I guess.
And the nice thing about Magic Flute is also that I think everybody can find something. So there is the little child that can find something, and especially watching other children on stage. And there is also the grandma. And so I think really this is set on the perfect time for Christmas time, where the whole family can go together and enjoy an opera evening. So I think everybody can find something. It's very colorful and a lot of fantasy. And I think this is what is missing in our lives, fantasy, that we just don't have. Everything is so made and so clear. And there you can just go and dream. And this is what I also like in opera so much.
I couldn't agree with you more. The Magic Flute runs through January 27th at the Lyric Opera. Christiana Karg and Andrew Staples, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.